Well, good afternoon, fellow constitutionalists, and welcome to the Free For All Friday edition of the Dan Clemens Show, a Christian political talk show. I'm your host, Dan Clemens, your constitutional warrior fighting for your right just to be an American. It is January 26th, in the year of the Lord 2018. Remember, we're a hyphen-free, PC-free zone. God is still in control, and He does love you. And I'm broadcasting live from the Hemlock Studios here in the beautiful Central Susquehanna Valley in the great Keystone State. And I have a show lined up for you, folks. I apologize to Dave and anybody else that was looking for a daily video coming out with the podcast like I was doing. Ever since Bernie Sanders' town hall on Medicare for All that was aired by the Young Turks on the internet on Tuesday night, I have been researching to rebut a lot of the fallacies that he's putting out about Medicare for All. And I'll have those links in the show notes page over at the danclemensshow.com to those three videos that are already up over at my page now. And if you see me looking back and forth between the computers, I'm trying something new with OBS, Open Broadcaster. I wasn't using the studio mode, and Throughout this week, I've been messing with OBS, and the way I'm doing videos now with rebuttal videos and putting in slides and videos in the system, the transition mode makes it a lot easier for me to transition from one scene to the next scene, and hopefully that'll show in the quality of my videos coming out here. And hopefully Dave is having a good day today. Talked to him in email a couple times this week, and hopefully everything's going well for him. If you're tracking the show notes, as far as the episodes, today's episode is 964. I entitled the show Kentucky School Shooting, March for Life, and then finally Women's March, because I want to cover all three of them. I'm not going to cover all three of them in depth like some people might think I should, but I am going to touch on all three of them. I'm probably going to spend more time on the Kentucky shooting, school shooting, and some of my thoughts behind that, given some of the animosity towards gun owners on Facebook, Twitter, and in not so much the lamestream media, but the regressive media on the internet are really... I clicked on a couple of them just to see, like over at Daily Cost and Think Progress. I couldn't read them. I could not read the articles because of the profanity in them, so I just clicked them off. I'm not going to share them with you. And we're going to talk about some of the elements that are missing in this and other school shooting stories that you never hear the lamestream media bring out. You don't hear the anti-gun folks bring this out, especially on Facebook, Twitter, social media. And I've asked this question before, and I'll ask it again when we get down there, when we talk about these school shootings. So hang on to your hats when we get there. Also, I have been, like I said, I'll put a link up to the Bernie Sanders National Town Hall on Medicare for All. It's about an hour and 42 minutes. And yes, my eyes were bleeding by the time I got done with it, just watching it. And it was because of all the blatant omissions. Very one-sided. He didn't have anybody up there that disputed what he was saying. He didn't have anybody with the thought about putting up links at the bottom of the video. Now, the Young Turks put this on, and they don't always put links up or cite sources in their videos either. And I found this to be a truth with the regressives on YouTube. Like the Young Turks, the Humanist Report, they don't cite their sources. And when you ask them to cite their sources, they just tell you to go Google it. Well, I'm sorry, if I'm going to talk about an issue on the show, I am going to give you the sources. I am going to give you a link to the sources so you know exactly where I'm getting my information from. So, and to make sure that I'm not misquoting folks. And this is why it took me, like I said, I started this journey on Medicare for All on Tuesday night and didn't finish up till last night actually uploading the three videos, and I still got a little bit of work to do on tags and everything on the last video I put up. I've already got, I left some comments on the video over there at the Bernie Sanders Town Hall about this. I've gotten a couple comments back so far. They've been pretty civil. One was about age for re-enlisting in the military. Let's say you're in the military and you got out and you wanted to re-enlist. They do have an age limit with that. You take the age limit that the military has and subtract subtract the number of years or add the number of years you're actually in or subtract the number of years you were in from your age is the easiest way to do it. And it'll tell you if you're above the age to get back in. And again, he was saying these stories without citing any sources. Again, most of his panelists were saying things without citing sources. And I'm just preparing you if you go over and watch these videos. The first one you should watch is Bernie Sanders says 36,000 people will die every year without Obamacare or without health insurance. And the Young Turks repeated that as a fact. They said, this is a fact. And I rebut that completely in that video because of the studies they actually used were assumptions. Where there was a study that they're making some assumptions about two other studies that were making assumptions. They weren't scientifically fact-filled. And so if you watch that one, the rest of the video will be easier to watch. The other two videos will explain more about the town hall. But if you watch that first one, the town hall will be easier to watch because you know that he's coming from a, and I'm just going to say it, he comes from a point of lying. You know, he's lying about this. Now, if he had come out and said, though, this is what, they were making some assumptions about this, and this is what, you know, this is what we'll go with, the assumptions. He didn't say that. He was stating it as fact, that 36,000 people die every year without health insurance. And comparing our health insurance and our healthcare system to Canada and Europe, and how, you know, he was praising all these socialist medicine countries, but never brought up the fact that the UK's Ministry of Health Services, MHS, is imploding. Never bring up the fact the high taxes that, like Norway, the percentage of their taxes to the GDP is 58%. It's over double what the United States is in 2016, I think it was the last year it was reported. And that's even, ours is even going to go down even further this year because of the Trump tax cuts. So that's where I've been at the past 2.5 days. I do apologize for not putting out a daily episode of podcast so people can hear those. And I'll make sure my volumes are up here. Coming into the, there we go. So it amazes me how he could keep a straight face, how the panelists could keep a straight face while they were lying. And an omission is the same thing as a lie. If you don't tell the truth about something, then you're, or don't share the whole, all the facts about something, you're lying. And again, it just, it, I was laughing half the time, you know, I'm like, some of these were so easy to dispute, but I was setting up some slides and everything, which takes a little while to actually do that. So, but today, again, some of this I wanted to talk about the past couple days, but didn't get a chance, so I'm sort of consolidating everything in the show today. And again, we're going to talk about the Kentucky school shooting, some of my thoughts around that. March for Life, wonderful, wonderful day that they had on last Friday, the 19th, doing that. And then the Women's March that was on March 20th, and just the total difference between the two marches. And they both had men and women in it. They were both dominated by women, but just the general attitudes between the two were like night and day. And we're going to talk about that also. Today's show is being brought to you by the Dan Clements Show Cafe Press Store. Now, if you like what you hear on the Dan Clements Show and you want to help the show out and you want to wear my logo proudly to tell people, look, I support Dan Clements and the Dan Clements Show and what he's doing there, you can go to the danclementsshow.com and on the main menu, you'll see the TDCS Cafe Press button. Hit that and it'll take you over to my store. There's not a lot of items in there yet, but I have t-shirts, I have a ball cap, and I get t-shirts for men and women, hoodies, coffee mugs, and a mouse pad with my logo on it. So, folks, if you like what you hear on the show, please, please help me out. This, when you buy something at Cafe Press, you'll not only get some quality stuff, but you'll also be supporting the show. And that's one of the ways I try to help support myself, besides affiliate marketing and besides just directly begging folks, which I had just done that recently here. I put a post out. I actually boosted a post on Minds.com. And I'm going to be doing next week, I'm going to boost a post on Facebook about from Patreon asking for monthly support, $1, $5, $10 a month support until I can get the show. And I'm the type of guy, I'll ask for support until the show can support itself with advertisers and other things like that, with selling my bling, as it were. So that's one of the reasons why I try to sell stuff, because at least you get something in return. When you donate to the show, you will get something in return, especially once I start getting up or close to my goals. I will be able to bring a video editor and a researcher on. Those are the first two things I want to do, and that way I can still put a daily show out while someone else is doing the research that I need for the show and for the articles and rebuttal videos that I'm doing. I'm getting very active here at the Dan Clement Show, I'm putting in more hours a day than what I normally do. But I'm handling it, even though it's a little painful towards the end of the day. I'm still handling it. So, I don't want to seem like I'm begging, but you know, I guess I am. Today's daily Bible reading comes from the epistle from James, chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing songs. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church, and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Confess your trespasses one to another, and pray for one another, that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And I just want to focus in on that last phrase, the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. I've seen prayer in action. I've seen prayer work when we pray for folks. I really have. So I don't want to make light of that. I mean, it's the fervent prayer, the often offered heartfelt prayer avails much in our lives. It helps us out when we pray a fervent prayer, and it helps those out that we're praying for. Today's oatmeal comes from an unknown author. Prayer never falls on deaf ears. Today's short Bible lesson comes from Mike Riley over at gewatkins.net. Yield not to temptation. It's a good bulletin article. I encourage you to go over and read that. And because we're tempted all the time to do dumb and stupid. We really are. And when we do dumb and stupid, we can recover from that as long as it isn't too dumb and too stupid. We can recover from that. But we're tempted to do a lot of things. In what I'm doing here in commentating on the news, and I try not to yield to this temptation at all, I try not to have too many knee-jerk reactions to situations. Of course, I've been doing this since 2007, so I've been doing it long enough. My reactions sometimes aren't going to be knee-jerk because I've seen it already. You know, as the writer of Ecclesiastes says, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, so, you know, my knee-jerk, sometimes people think, that, you know, if a situation comes up and I say something right away, well, that's just knee-jerk reaction. And it's like, no, it's not a knee-jerk reaction. It is an actual, you know, I've been here, done that, commentated on similar situations. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about when I give a reaction. Now, this story with the Kentucky school shooter. Let me get this set up for you here. I got to get over on the right page over here. Okay. This is a Fox News. This is a Fox News story, and it's similar to everybody else's out there. I'd just rather use Fox News than I would some of the other lamestream media out there. And this is just rehash of everything that's already gone on. There's two dead. and 18 others injured. The perpetrator, which they're not naming, has been arrested. They're waiting for some other things, and they're not really sure. They're not talking about authorities are seen escorting a handcuffed boy away from the scene earlier in the day. Details on possible motives were unclear. Police escort, he was apprehended by the sheriff's department here on site at the school, thankfully, before any more lives could be taken. Kentucky State Police Lieutenant Michael Webb said during an afternoon press conference. Officials have not yet determined whether the suspect will be charged as a juvenile or adult, Sanders says. The shooting, and it goes, he goes on talking about things down through here. This is one of the young ladies, and this breaks my heart. This Bailey Nicole Holt, she was one of the victims, one of the ones that were killed, and after she was shot, she was on the phone with her mom. And it just, it breaks my heart to think that her mom had to go through that, okay? And the community is going to recover. It's going to take a while, but the community will recover, and, you know, time does heal all wounds. Does that mean we forget about them? No, but time does heal all wounds down there. Now, the thing I want to talk about here, and this is something that I know it's going to be sensitive to some folks, but we must talk about it because the lamestream media is not talking about it. I watched a lot of the news coverage on One American News Network, on RT America, on Sky News. I've read a handful of articles, maybe half a dozen articles on the Kentucky shooting and other mass shootings as far as school shootings, which there's a report out that there's been 11... well, I didn't have that. It for some reason it wasn't loading up in the let me get it over there. Maybe because I didn't load it up. I thought I had loaded this up. Anyway, there has been 11 school shootings, and this is a report from NPR. And it is, let me get down, where'd it go here? Oh, it's heard on All Things Considered on NPR. I used to listen to them when I was in the truck driving, whenever they were on. I think they were on the mornings. I think you could hear an episode of them. The New York Times, and this was posted on the 24th, the New York Times reported that Tuesday's school shooting in Kentucky was the 11th shooting on school properties in 2018, just 23 days into the year. Mary Louise Kelly Hosh, yesterday's shooting was not the first to happen on school property in 2018. It was the 11th. Alyssa Chang Host, and it was the third this week. Two other incidents happened on Monday. The first at a high school in Italy, Texas. A 15-year-old girl was shot by another student. Unidentified reporter, a firefighter who came to the victim's aid here told me tonight he just keeps repeating, don't let me die. And it goes on down through and talks about these 11 shootings. So we had 11 school shootings since the beginning of the year. And they're all by teenagers. You know, they're all, you know, middle-aged teenagers, you know, 14, 15 years old. And the one thing, and I keep going back to this, the one thing that they don't report about is how did these teenagers get a hold of a deadly weapon, like a gun, like a pistol or a rifle. I go back to Sandy Hook. You know, Sandy Hook, this was, I believe the Sandy Hook shooter was a 14-year-old. Just looking this up. I don't remember if it said what his age was, but he was young. I think he was 14 years old, if memory serves me right. And nobody was asking. Now, they did have some reports about the guns that were in his mother's house, but where was the parents? Where's the parents' responsibility and culpability in these school shootings? We never get there. My Facebook antagonist, she always wants to talk about how it's... the NRA and the Republicans and people who support the NRA, it's their fault because we can't have sensible gun safety measures. They're not calling it gun control anymore, folks. Let me put this out to you right now. They're not calling it gun control anymore. They're calling it gun safety measures. You know, just like it used to be global cooling, then it went into global warming, and now it's morphed into climate change. And I don't know if that's going to be changed because climate change gets a bad rap or it gets a bad taste in people's mouth. And eventually that might be changed also. But there are some words that are being changed here, very subtle. It's no longer, again, no longer gun control. It's gun security or gun safety. And it's always been that way. It's always been that way. Now, again, all these reports, except for possibly the Sandy Hook, which I read some stories, but I don't think they were lamestream media, but I read some stories about Sandy Hook where they were questioning about why there were so many. It's not, and to me, I don't care how many weapons you have in a house, like guns. It's, are they locked up? Now, you can see behind me, over my right shoulder, on your left, that's my gun cabinet. It is locked. And even though it's locked and it looks like it's got a glass door on it, those weapons are secure on the inside too. You know, I keep them locked up. But I have a daughter in the house that wouldn't touch them even if I asked her to. You know, and my son, if he was living here, he's very well trained and he's very safety conscious with his guns, his pistols and everything. Matter of fact, I keep... I won't show it because of people might be at work and I don't want to upset anybody. And my buddy Dave recommended I shouldn't show it on the video. But here to my left, I do have my pistol sitting here for personal protection, even in my house. And people are like, well, what do you got to be worried about? Well, I don't know. Maybe there's some deranged person out there watching my videos that doesn't like what I'm saying and doesn't care if I have a First Amendment right to say it and wants to shut me up. You know, wouldn't be the first time. Wouldn't be the first time that people that have a different ideology than me quit using words and start using their fists and their feet and other weapons to silence people from free speech. It just happened, and I reported on it last Friday. We're talking about the Night of Freedom in New York City. That Antifa, again, Night of Freedom wasn't even on the streets. Antifa heard about it and... got outside the menu and put a guy in the hospital. And they got the guy that attacked the 56-year-old man that was attending the event. And I hope not only do they hold him accountable, but I think they go after the local chapter of Antifa, too. They're terrorists. And I heard on the news today President Trump is not going to close down Gitmo. So maybe some of these homegrown terrorists need to take a trip down to Gitmo. Just saying, folks, it'd be a good place to put them. But again, let's get back to the core question. How did they get a hold of these weapons? How in the world did they get a hold of these weapons, being teenagers? There's no way. There's no way when I was, before I had a driver's license, would I ever be allowed to have, we didn't have pistols growing up. We had shotguns and rifles. And the rifles we had were, one 30-06 was dad's. And a couple, another one, a 22, which semi-automatic, which was my mom's. And then we had a single-shot lever action 22 that I used a lot for squirrel hunting and just plinking. Then we had shotguns. And it wasn't until I had a driver's license and had a car, and I was a prolific hunter when I was in high school. Well, I went small game hunting, went deer hunting with bow. And Ohio was a shotgun state where I lived in northern Ohio. I went deer hunting, but I was big. I loved small game. I loved rabbit, squirrel, pheasant. I loved all that small game hunting. And there was many a times. My dad knew, mom knew too, because I told him that I was taking it. Mom, dad, I'm taking my 12-gauge out, putting it in the trunk, locking it up with my hunting gear, because after school, me and a couple buddies are going to go out in the woods and you know, squirrel season, rabbit, whatever we were hunting. And I would take it to school, but I never, ever thought about going out to the car and get my 12-gauge out to settle a score or whatever, if a bully was picking on me, the thought never crossed my mind to go out in my car and get my 12 gauge, come take care of the issue. The only thought that crossed my mind is, to bullies anyway, if you're going to pick on me, I'm going to fight back. I don't like bullies, never have liked bullies. I don't like them picking on other people, and I especially don't like them picking on me. And I'm not saying I won every fight, but those bullies eventually left me alone because they darn sure knew I was in a fight with them. It wasn't like I just laid down, rolled over, and let them beat up on me. You know, it was... That's the way real men settle disputes. If it goes beyond words. And some people you can't talk to. Bullies you can't talk to. I'm sorry. There's just too many bullies out there. I've had too much experience over my life with bullies. And you can't talk to them. You can't reason with them. And then if reason doesn't work, not that I want to beat my point into somebody, but when you try to get, you sort of extract yourself out of the situation, bullies won't let you do that. Because they see that as a sign of weakness, and 9 times out of 10, they'll attack you. And I've had a couple bullies totally regret that. You know, because I didn't want to fight. Didn't mean I didn't know how. Didn't mean I couldn't take a punch or beating. It just, that's just the way I grew up. That's the way I was taught. But again, there's a bunch of issues, a bunch of dynamics going on in America that are just... with the third wave feminist movement and the wussification of men in America, the, you know, turning our young men and boys into soy boys and soy men who, you know, can't take an insult, or if someone says something, they become so offended that, you know, they just break down in tears and want to crawl up into a safe space. You know, most of the time when somebody offends me, I laugh it off. Because most of the time, the whatever they're trying to say to me to offend me is they're just insults that, even though they try to be personal, they don't know me. And so, you know, I kind of laugh them off. And I'm like, I use this a lot when I get in debates on social media. And this always happens, folks, when somebody loses the debate. Now, I never do this. If I lose a debate... And it's seldom that I do, but I have in the past, and I apologize for saying, hey, I got a fact wrong here, or I misunderstood this, and I fully take back what I said and apologize. Doesn't mean that I actually lost the debate. I lost on a point in the debate. But 9 times out of 10, when someone loses a debate with me, they go right to the vulgarity. They go right to personal attacks with profanity and just everything else. And the next thing I type back to them, right after that happens, when the debate is lost, insults become the tool of the loser. And that has been the key. But I'm not going to go fight him over that. I'm not going to hunt him down and punch your lights out because someone said something to me, you know, that might be offensive, which most of the time it is offensive to me. But guess what? It doesn't hurt me. Yeah, okay, my feelings get hurt a little bit, and I'm offended. Whoop-dee-doo. You know, I'll get over it. I'll get over it, you know? And these people should too, but we're not raising our young boys up this way. They don't know how to resolve conflicts. And even at a young age, adults are trying, well, use your words. And like I said, I'm not advocating for violence, but folks, sometimes words fall on deaf ears when it comes to bullies. And I'm not saying this is what's happening in these school shootings, that they're coming in and taking out all these bullies. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is we're not being taught, our children are not being taught proper conflict resolution. Yes, use your words to begin with. And as Coach King in high school, he said the best way to avoid a punch is not to be there. The best way to avoid getting into an altercation is just not be there. So your first move, if it looks like it's going to escalate into a conflict, a fisticuffs or something physical, is look for a way of escape and get out of there. There's no shame and no harm in that at all. If, especially if one party just doesn't want to hear what you have to say and they're just going to pummel on you anyway. And if you can't, if they've cut off all means of escape, then whatever, in my opinion, if a bully cuts off all your means of escape, then it's justified what he gets. He is, you know, you are justified in defending yourself, and he's asking what he's going to get. And I've seen way too many times bullies back people in the corner and get their clocks cleaned. You know, because they tangled with the wrong person. They thought somebody, because they were meek, that they were weak. And that's just not the case. But we don't even teach I'm talking mostly to boys now. We don't even teach our boys what being meek means. Being meek, and I think some people are teaching the wrong thing, being meek does not mean that you were weak and you're not willing to stand up for yourself. You know, being meek is willing to take the low road, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but to be the better man, as it were, to take the high road. You know, and I was going to say the low road and let people walk over you. You know, like if you're on a single pathway on a mountain and you got one hiker coming this way and one hiker coming this way, and there's no other way around each other, and one of the others going to have to back up, or one of you is going to have to lay down and let the other one step over you to get past you, who's going to be the one to lay down? You see what I'm saying? You know, so word arguments can escalate into fisticuffs real quick, but they don't have to. And if one person is there willing to, you know, okay, we said our piece, we said our words, I'm going to go my way, and the other person doesn't allow that, we're not teaching our young boys the best way to take care of that. What we're teaching our boys is, well, we need to find a safe space, and we need to put that just swallow that aggression and swallow it down, and you know, you never revert to fisticuffs or anything like that, especially even if the person is swinging on you or trying to hurt you and stuff like it. You never resort to violence. You never meet violence with violence. And folks, we have a right. We have a God-given right to defend ourselves. You know, this thing about giving somebody the other cheek, you got in the Bible, that's always been taken out of context. Back then, a slap on the cheek was like one of the ultimate insults. You were insulting that individual. And usually in Jesus' time, when it was talked like that, it was usually because of religious differences. Not always, but usually. And to turn the cheek to somebody else means that you're going to let that insult stand. But Jesus only allowed at one time, did he ever allow anybody to lay hands on them. That was the night he was arrested and he was crucified. But that was part of him fulfilling prophecy. That was why he came to this earth, to die on the cross for our sins. But as human beings, we do have a right to protect our life, our liberty, and our freedoms from aggressors. Sometimes we use the law to do that, but sometimes you don't have time to use the law for that. So to defend ourselves, I see nothing wrong with that. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, or if you think I'm wrong, you can leave some comments in the show notes, but we have every right. But getting back to the school shooter here, I think there's a lot of dynamics going on here. I'm not saying this kid is innocent. They caught him, they shot, you know, there's witnesses and everything, and they're not releasing his name yet, but, you know, there's enough people said, yes, this is the perpetrator, he did it. I mean, it seems to me they got the right person, and they arrested him. I'm not saying we let him off the hook. But there's a lot of dynamics that are involved here that led up to the situation, and I'm really curious about these. The Sandy Hook shooter. I have an article in here from the Yale Daily News about the Sandy Hook treater was treated at Yale. They determined he had some type of, it was sort of like OCD or something like that. They didn't really go and explain the whole thing. I have a link to the article in the show notes page today. They didn't explain everything about it, but they prescribed some medicine for him. And the mother said, you know, somebody couldn't raise his arms. And the psychiatrist said, well, this medicine shouldn't do that. And so they took them off, and, you know, I can understand about chemistry in people, you know, and this, these, as far as I'm concerned, those medicines could have caused that child not to be able to raise his arms. So his mother took him off the medicines, because I know I was on a medicine that, that gave me panic attacks when they said, the rheumatologist said it's highly unlikely that that medicine would give anybody panic attacks. Well, I told him, I said, you know, I had a panic attack while taking that. You know, and my doctor took me off them right away. You know, so everybody's body chemistry is different with that. So there's this report out there. It was posted back in January 22nd, 2014, about how Sandy Hook shooter was under treatment, but there's other reports in the autopsy and everything that there was no drugs in his system. So it wasn't drug-induced, but still he was... The folks at Yale wanted to treat him for some type of mental deficiency that he had, you know. And I have another one in here. I brought this up on the show months ago during the Sulphur Springs church shooting. This is an article over at WorldNet Daily by Leo Holman. Big list of drug-induced killers. And a lot of these mass shootings around the country. Now, this was back in, this was posted back on June 18, 2015. A lot of these mass shootings around the country, this guy went in and did some research, and it was off of a, actually he was reporting on a research article, and they were finding a correlation between the psychiatric drugs that these mass shooters were on during the mass shooting. Now, I've also read in the regressive side of the internet where they're poo-pooing these reports, that they don't put any credence. All this, you know, this myth about drug interactions and shootings, you know, they don't want to see that. They don't even want that in the public eye, because the regressive left is trying to create a narrative that white men are evil, even white boys are evil, and they're the only ones that cause these mass shootings. Although there was a church shooting not too long ago in Antioch, Tennessee, where it was a black guy that was doing the shooting, but you didn't hear much about that. So there's a narrative they're trying to craft here, and anything that's outside that narrative is just, you know, it needs to stay outside that narrative, and it's not important. But I think all these things need to be taken into consideration when you're talking about these school shootings. You know, what is the mental health of the child? Because to me, even in war, it's not natural for one human being to kill another human being. That's why we have so many suicides. In veterans who come back from combat. That's why they come back messed up with psychological conditions. That's why they need a lot of counseling and a lot of time to heal those wounds, because thank God I've never had to shoot at anybody or kill anybody. But I know enough people, and I've had enough of them in my life, that it's something that damages the human psyche. Unless you're just mentally like you're a psychopath or something like that, or a sociopath. But a normal person, it's not normal for us to take somebody else's life, and it damages us. It really does. And so it's especially not normal for a teenage boy to take a gun to school and start killing people. That's not normal. And yes, I can sit here and say my heart goes out to the family of the ones that lost their children, or 15-year-old children, a boy and a girl, and the other ones that are still fighting for their lives and still be supportive of my Second Amendment rights. Because again, I want to go back to my beginning points. How did the teenager get a hold of a lethal weapon? Where was his parents? Were these guns locked up? Do you have easy access to these guns? Those are questions that are still going to need to be answered, and it will be in the near future. If the past is any indication of the present or the future, all this information usually comes out sooner or later. It always does. So I'm going to caution people on the left, especially on social media, to not have so many knee-jerk reactions to this, that the NRA... it's just a bunch of evil people, and all the Republicans that take money and support the NRA are evil, and all gun owners are evil, and we need to crack down, we need to take away. And there's been people out there saying on social media that we just need to do away with all guns in America. And again, I have a legal gun here in my possession. All my guns are legal for me to own. None of mine killed anybody. I got a shotgun in there. It's got racked up some small game. I've had that shotgun since I was a sophomore, junior in high school, and I've taken a lot of small game. Very tasty. I don't hunt animals just to hunt them. I hunt them for meat. You know, I love wild meat, wild animals. I'm a carnivore. As I recently told a vegan on Facebook, and she was offended by it, I don't say it to offend anybody. I say it to more be comical. She thought it was discriminatory that we eat animals, that we're discriminating against another species, and we should quit that. And my comeback to her was, well, I get all my vegetable matter in condensed form, and then shared a picture of a big old porterhouse T-bone on the grill being cooked. That's how I get my vegetables. She took offense to that, and that's on her, because I didn't mean it to be offensive. I meant it to be funny, and I'm not going to take it back. And if she's offended, that's on her, not me. So I spent enough time on this Kentucky school shooting, and again, there's too many knee-jerk reactions on all sides. We need to let this thing play out, let the authorities do their investigations, and the truth will come out. The truth will definitely come out of here, and it is an issue. It is an issue that we have 11 school shootings in the first 23 days of 2018. There's a problem there. But the problem is not the gun. The problem is not the gun. That's just a symptom. There's a deeper problem going on here, and I believe it's a societal problem. I can't put my finger on it, and I can't say this for scientific fact, but it's just the way we're bringing up our children and how we teach them to resolve conflicts. And it's just, again, nobody wants to be pushed around. Nobody. Ask any woman. There's no woman out there, and I won't say no, but the vast, overwhelming majority of women out there will tell you they don't want to be violently raped by somebody, to be violated that way. Nobody in the right mind would think that. Nobody ever wants to be bullied. I don't care if it's cyberbullying or not. No one ever wants to be bullied. But there's a disconnect going on here somewhere with these kids. Either a disconnect between them and their parents or them and their friends. I think social media has a lot to do with us. When I was growing up, we didn't have this stuff. I grew up with a rotary phone on a party line. And I know that I have a demographic out there between 20 and 34. It's a bigger demographic on my show here. I just said those words there and I go, what? And it's like I hear keyboards slapping and pounding on Google. A rotary phone? A party telephone line? What's that? And then they get a picture of it and they're like, ah! And it's, it's funny. You mean you had to sit there and dial that and let that come back and hit another number, dial around, let that come back? Yep, for many, many years until we got the push button, the tone phones, you know, and those were, oh my, those were great because you didn't have to wait, especially if you had a zero in the number. Zero, brrr, nine, brrr. It took forever to dial a phone number. When we got the push button phones, oh my goodness. Man, that was like, I had finger memory on all the numbers back then. You know, and I could punch out a number as fast as you wanted me to. But again, there's a disconnect somewhere. You know, we had friends. We were very close friends. We were, you know, out playing almost every day. Even after school, we either hunting or we were doing something else with our good buddies. And I remember my buddy Denny and Mike, or White Owls, we used to call him. My two best friends in high school. And again, I was in Scouts. You know, we learned how to socialize. And did we get insulted sometimes? Yeah. Was there some fights every now and then in our social circles outside of school? Yeah, every now and then. But guess what? Usually we always made up and were friends. The worst fight I ever got in high school. A guy named Mike, I won't say his last name. I didn't know he was a Golden Glove boxer. I don't know if that had made too much of a difference, but I found out afterwards he was a Golden Glove boxer. But he was picking on my friend Denny. I was trying to get in Ohio, you have to get a permit from farmers to go hunt on their property. That's, I don't know if that's just the way now, but back then we had to have those permits with us, and he had a book he carried to school with him, or he brought into school with him, so he gave me the permit because I was going to go squirrel hunting down by the river on his dad's property. And Mike was picking on him. And I told him twice to quit picking on him, and I said, I ain't going to ask you again after the second time. I said, I ain't going to ask you again. And Mike just looked at me, and he went to reach for Denny, and I reached him first and threw him against a – he was – his head only came up to my chin. I one-armed him against the blackboard, and he came off. I never seen anybody move so fast. He came off that blackboard and swinging, and he's using my chin as a speed bag. But, you know, my punches were like coming from South Texas, and they were slow and deliberate, and he let me hit him the first two or three times, didn't duck out of them. After the third time, he started trying to duck out of the way. Because after the fight, he said I was shaking him right down to his toes. Every hit I hit him, he said he'd never been hit so hard in his life. And now his hits, they hurt, but they weren't that hard. You know, he was just rabbit punching me. But man, when I was hitting him, man, I was like winding that bad boy up and bringing it from the South Pole. But we became friends after that. Matter of fact, we were friends before that. I knew this Mike when I was in junior high school in Findlay. And his family had moved out in our school district when we moved out to Riverdale High School. And he was only after a couple of years than his dad, his folks moved again, because I don't think he graduated with us. But I knew him before, and we were acquaintances. We weren't good friends when I knew him in junior high. I just knew him. We palled around a little bit. But we became friends after that. It wasn't like I held any animosity towards him. You know, I taught him a lesson. Don't pick on my friends. You want to be a bully? Bully somebody else. But don't do it in my presence, and don't pick on my friends. Because Denny was not a fighter. Matter of fact, my buddy Mike, he wasn't much of a fighter. And I was the brute of the bunch. But we learned how to solve our differences without carrying a grudge against somebody, without thinking about, man, I need to kill him and put him down. I mean, we don't do that anymore. You know, and there's, like I said, there's a disconnect going on somewhere there. Real quick here. I want to get into the Trump's speech for the March of Life, which someone shared on, I don't know if it's social media or in the news, but this is the first time a president has addressed the, let me just read down through here. Trump's speech to March of Life marks a U-turn on abortion by Jonathan how do you pronounce his name? Shanzer and Richard Goldberg over at Politico, and this was posted on the 18th of this month. He said, President Trump will speak at Friday's March for Life, which was on the 19th, becoming the first sitting president to address the annual anti-abortion gathering by satellite in its 45-year history. Whether it was by satellite or not, first sitting president to address the March for Life in its 45-year history. So he made history there, okay? The announcement made on Wednesday by the White House caps a stunning evolution for Trump, who once declared himself pro-choice in every respect. A year into his first term as president, anti-abortion groups are praising his record as one of the most supportive of their cause in recent memory. So we had, and I'm not going to share any, I don't have any pictures really. I had some pictures from the Women's March, but I can't even share those because of some of the posters and the profanity that these women, and even there were some young girls there that didn't look like they were much older than 8 or 9 years old, holding some of the most profane posters you'd ever want to see with the F-bomb all over them. Or another young lady, she didn't look like she could be much more than 15, 16-year-old, holding up a sign that we need to kill Trump and Pence. Now, I don't know if the Secret Service is going to go talk to her. I think they should, because you can't threaten a sitting president. You can't threaten any president, but you can't, especially a sitting president or vice president, you can't threaten them with death like that. And yet that was going on. But the March for Life was a totally different affair. The March for Life was celebrating life, and was very inclusive because there were women at the March for Life. I guess they might have got down there early for the Women's March in D.C., but there was women in the March for Life at D.C. who were putting up posters, you know, showing posters that they did not agree with the ideas of the March for Life. But you didn't see in any of the video footage or anything like that, you didn't see any of these pro-life protesters or advocates out there that were advocating for the life of the unborn telling these women they didn't belong there, they had no voice there. There was none of that going on, at least any that I've seen, and I haven't heard of any being reported. And this is the case with the March for Life. And again, when the folks for the March for Life, when they got done and they left, there was very little cleanup to be done. There wasn't posters and signs laying all over the ground. Most of the conservative groups that I've seen, especially down in D.C., that protest or, you know, advocate for something, they use the policy of carry in and carry back out. Okay, if you take it in, you take it out with you. The Women's March, they were showing pictures after the march in D.C., and there was posters laying all over the place. The ground was just wrecked, and somebody was going to have to clean that up. And that's a huge difference between conservatives and regressives. You know, the regressives, they say they care about all these things, about the environment, especially about the environment. What do? They trash it up at their protest. They don't take home what they brought in. And to me, that's a black mark against them. So I'm glad President Trump, I got to watch the speech. It's a little longer than I could show on here. I encourage you to go listen to it. It was a good speech. And I know in his younger days he supported pro-choice. But people can come to the light side, as it were. People can come to the light side. And I was going to show you, I don't think I have it. Let me check my, I don't think I put it in my... No, I didn't put it in here, but I did share a meme on Facebook where they're talking about, you know, if you really feel like you're wasting your life, he said, just think about these women marching at the woman's march, protesting against rights that they still have. None of the rights were taken away from them at all. And that's what these women at the Women's March were protesting. That President Trump, just by him being elected, took away their rights. No, that wasn't the case. What they're mad about is he beat the pants off of Hillary Clinton. In one of the funniest election night coverages I've ever seen myself, everybody had Hillary Clinton winning, that there's no way Donald Trump can win. And he came in the Electoral College, which, by the way, folks, is the way we elect presidents, not the popular vote. I'm sorry to tell you that. It's the way we elect presidents. And again, it was so funny to see him mop the floor up with her in the Electoral College and all these pundits that were pro-Hillary and had her pegged to win. Just could not believe it. And matter of fact, there's still people today. And mostly women. There's some men that I come across, but mostly these women out there that just will not accept it. Period. End of sentence, move on to the next paragraph. Will not accept President Trump as their president. And because he became president, even though he hasn't taken any of their rights away, they thought with Hillary in the White House that they would just have carte blanche to do anything they want and allow any right that they wanted to turn anything into a right. And this was another thing, you know, talking about rights, this was another main theme on the Bernie Sanders Medicare for All town hall. Well, health care is a right. It's immoral to think any other way that it's not a right. And I'm like, you guys got to be kidding me. And Rand Paul, he said this in the Senate. He said, it's not a right, it's a service. And if you claim it's a right, then you claim the power to force doctors to do whatever you want them to do because it's your right. And that's slavery. And, of course, it doesn't surprise me that the Democrat Party, who is the original party of slavery, takes this stance when it comes to health care. It doesn't amaze me at all. So that was one of those things that we're talking about. And one of the biggest differences between the March for Life and the Women's March is that 92% of all abortions out there are for the convenience of the mother, father, or both. mainly for the convenience of the mother. She accidentally got pregnant, which I don't know how that happens, but there is. I'm being sarcastic here. I mean, condoms are not 100% effective. Birth control pill is not 100% effective. IUDs are not 100% effective. The only 100% verified way to not get pregnant is to abstain from sex. There's no way that you can get pregnant if you're not having sex. But Dan, that's not right. You can't say that to these young women. Well, why not? Somebody has to say it to them. I don't care if you're 20, 30 years old. Someone has to say this to them. You know, when 92, and that's being generous. You know, given 8% for incest, rape, and the health of the mother, which some of the studies I've read have that down to less than 5%. But I'm using the Guttmacher statistics on this. They're a couple years old now. 92% of abortions are done out of the convenience of the mother. So where were they? Again, it's just like these parents of these school shooters. Where were they? Where were these women's wits about them? You know, if they didn't want to get pregnant, they should have taken measures. They should have taken measures. And I've read articles where married couples, they absolutely do not want to have kids in their first 5 years or so of marriage. And that's the same way with Lori and I. We didn't want to have kids in the first few years of our marriage because we wanted to get used to living with each other, because neither one of us lived with anybody else other than our families until we got married. And we wanted to get used to being together ourselves as a couple before we introduced children in there. So we took steps for her not to get pregnant. And I know some couples that, you know, I've been in marriage seminars, stuff like that. People talk freely in there. I'm not using names or anything or where we were at. But there was couples saying that they really wanted to make sure, so the wife was on birth control and the husband was using, you know, a prophylactic. So they were trying to definitely make sure that they weren't having kids until they wanted to. And so that's, the technology is available out there, folks. It really is. And this is the huge difference between the two, these two camps, as it were, almost armed camps, as it were. This is the main difference between the two. And there is a life. No matter what pro-choicers say, no matter what pro-abortionists say, there is a life we're talking about, that the life is in the womb, and that life needs to be protected. Now, I know they always say her body, her choice, but where was her choices not to get pregnant? Where were her choices? And again, I'm not dealing with the small percentage that happened because of rape or incest. I'm not saying that at all. You know, those are individual cases that need to be individually looked at. I'm talking about when the abortion's for out of convenience. Oh, not the right time in my life to get pregnant. It'll be a crimp on my lifestyle. And, you know, we need to just get rid of this child, you know, so it's not inconveniencing me, you know. And where was their choices? They had choices leading up to that moment. They certainly did. And yet, where were they? And like I said, most of my antagonists on Facebook, are, if they're listening to this, are probably shouting at their speakers right now. I'm a man. I don't understand. Well, I understand that people have choices, and people can make choices in that. I got this one article I just wanted to go over real quick here before we end the show. It's by Matt Walsh over at Daily Wire. He posted this on the January 22nd, 2018. Let me get that over there for you. Let me know how you like these transitions from slide to slide. They're not so abrupt anymore, which I kind of like the flow of the show when it does that. Just let me know what you think about that. The vile, awful woman's march is a symptom of a spiritual disease that infects our culture. On Friday, hundreds of thousands of compassionate, welcoming, cheerful women and men took to the streets of Washington, D.C., rallying support of basic human rights That's the woman's march. Then the woman's march happened. Now he's talking about the March for Life on Friday. Taking place just a day after the March for Life and in direct contrast to the annual pro-life event's joyful atmosphere of hope and generosity, the Women's March was once again vile, aimless, and embarrassing. Bitter feminists donned their trademark vagina hats and carried grotesque pornographic signs referring explicitly to their own genitalia, signs blaring important messages like... And just dropping the F-bomb all over the place, right, with Paul Ryan and Trump and Pence and everything, were hoisted proudly while little children with negligent parents walked innocently amid the mobs. Then they left their trash strewn across the city and went home. What message were they trying to send? What was the point of it all? Well, nobody at the march seemed to know. And let me stop there here. I've been watching, you know, like Walter's World and... Dice used to do that. Some other folks were there. I think Campus Reform was there. Prager University was there, had a reporter there. And they're asking these women why they're marching, and they could not articulate it in terms that made any sense. I mean, there was way too many of them there that couldn't articulate. But when you brought up, well, what's wrong with Trump? Blah, 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 blah. You know, just the profanity popped out, and, you know, he just needs to go crawl away and die somewhere, right? What is the point of it? Well, nobody at the march seemed to know. They know they support baby murder, which is why mass murderer Cecile Richards spoke at the Las Vegas march, and protesters heckled pro-lifers at the D.C. march. They know they hate Donald Trump. They know they're being oppressed, though they can't explain his oppression or give clear-cut examples of it. And this is what I was saying earlier. But... that's all they seem to know. Mostly the march was an expression of impotent rage by self-centered nihilists. It was an incoherent temper tantrum that was a demonstration of ignorance and hate. It was a perfect illustration of what our culture has become. There are those who say that the Women's March misrepresents Americans' women. I disagree. The numbers may have been down this year, but it still attracted thousands of people in 250 cities nationwide because it does represent many women in this country, just as it represents an equal proportion many men. We cannot call it an anomaly or pretend that we have never encountered and do not recognize the sort of people that turn up at rallies like this. We know that. Whether we like to admit it or not, the Women's March happens because we are precisely the sort of country where it would happen. It is just a graphic and disturbing symptom of the spiritual disease that inflicts our culture. It's fortunate that the March for Life was held on the same weekend because it proves that all is not quite lost. There is another side, and the two sides are separate by a vast divide which cannot be bridged by a compromise. You can only choose one or the other, and you can jump into the canyon between them and float aimlessly in the middle. But if you have the intellectual courage to make a choice, you can stand on the one side with those who fight for life, truth, and moral decency, or you can choose to stand on the other side with those who degrade human life, reject truth, and sneer at decency. Those are your options. Of course, I do not claim that everyone on the one side is a perfect angel and everyone on the other side is an irredeemable demon, yet there are real angels and demons at work in this world, and they already picked their sides long before we came into existence. We have only to decide which army we will join. And I really like this article about this because this is exactly what happened. I'm just going to pick on D.C. This is exactly what happened in D.C. If you look at the videos from the March for Life on the 19th, they weren't shushing anybody out of there. They weren't trying to silence anybody. They were very inclusive of pro-choicers that happened to be on the fringes. But it wasn't so with the Women's March. And yet, these women are protesting rights that they still have that were never taken away when President Trump became president. Their whole premise is ridiculous. And they have a Muslim, Susan Sosauer. I just, words fail me with this woman. And they've had other, they've had a mass murderer there, someone that has killed multiple people, policemen, way back when. They're speaking at the Women's March. You have some actresses like Ashley Judd that is just so vile and vulgar. It's unreal. And the outfits that these women are wearing, and they're most of them are homemade outfits and stuff like that. Now, these outfits that they're wearing, folks, are just, they're crazy. They're just absolutely crazy. And again, it amazes me the difference between night and day between these two groups. It really does. And it goes to show that there is a big divide in this country. And I do believe there's a right and wrong side to be on when it comes to either pro-choice, and I'm pro-choice, I choose life. But when and I'm going to quit using pro-choice because, again, this is one of these things, instead of saying gun control, they're talking about gun safety or gun security instead of gun control. Now, I just noticed that in some of the readings about this Kentucky shooting I served with you earlier. It's not pro-choice. It's pro-abortion. The Women's March is definitely a pro-abortion. And there is a right and wrong side to be on here. And if you're not on the right, I'm just put this statement out. If you're not on the side of life and wanting to protect life as much as humanly possible, you're on the wrong side of the equation there, folks. You really are. And I give them the grace to grow, but I know some Christians in the Church of Christ who are pro-choice. They don't see, you know, they don't see that there. And I give them some material, give them some verses out of the Bible, and let them think about it and let them stew on that. I'm giving them the grace to grow and mature in their ideas. You know, and hopefully they'll come around to, I'm just going to put it flatly here, God's side here, where we're protecting innocent human life. And life does begin at conception, folks. And take it from me as a father, your responsibility as a parent never ends. Never ends. My son's going to be 30 here soon. It never ends. Just be aware of that. But you know what? I wouldn't trade any of my days that I have with my son. Was there some things I wish I could have done differently in his when he was growing up? Yeah. Wish I was home more often and didn't have to be out in the truck, but you know, circumstances dictated that one of us had to make a living while the other one stayed home with our daughter, our special needs daughter. So I could make the money and my wife couldn't. But that meant some sacrifice, and I wish I could take that back, but I can't. But I wouldn't trade it for nothing. I wouldn't trade my special needs daughter for nothing. You know, I love them both to pieces. I love my wife to pieces. And, you know, I tried to raise my son with the values that he needed to take him through life. And, you know, this is very, very important that we do this for our children. We have to do this. We must do this. And if we're a parent and we're not instilling values in our children, the value of life, and I think this is one of the biggest things and one of the biggest reasons why we have all these shootings, especially these school shootings, because we're not teaching our children the value of life. We're not teaching our children that life is precious. And life is precious in all of its forms. Life is definitely precious in all of its forms. And it needs to be protected. School children need to be protected. But again, we need to bring all aspects into the argument, not just the NRA. When it comes to abortion, we need to bring all aspects into this and listen to both sides of it and give the one side the grace to grow and the truth and knowledge that life is precious. That's all I'm going to say about that, folks. I enjoyed being with you here this Friday. This has been the Dan Clements Show. I'm your host, Dan Clements, your constitutional warrior. Remember, if you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. Have a great rest of the day, folks, and God bless. And remember, on Sunday, attend a church of God's choice, the church he talks about in the New Testament, not your choice. And we'll see you on the next episode on Monday when I get it recorded and uploaded to the internet. Have a great rest of the weekend, and God bless.